Patrick, in his letters, he says, I'm sorry, guys, I can barely speak and write Latin. My grammar is very poor. My writing style is not very flowery. I can't write concisely focused essays. So I'm just going to tell you what I'm thinking and feeling. Mm. And as you read it, you say, I just get a portrait of this guy's heart.
You're listening to Practice Not Perfect, a podcast about practice that is rooted in the Christian spiritual tradition. I'm your host, James Matichuk, and I had a chance to talk with Aaron Burns and Mac Michelatos about their new book, Praying with St. Patrick. Here is our conversation. Hey, I'm privileged today to be joined by Mac Michelatos and Aaron Burns, who are the authors of a new book called Praying with St. Patrick. It's prayers and devotions inspired by an Irish hero of the faith. And Matt, you have been on this podcast before. If people don't remember, you were here to discuss your award-winning book with Kathy Kong, Loving Disagreement. And you've also written a number of other things. You're prolific. I think you're aiming to have more pieces of writing in the world than there are Waffle Houses in the South. you write in a number of genres, Christian nonfiction being one of them, but also young adult fiction. You have a children's book in the world. You have graphic novels and all kinds of things. And you are a member of the Screenwriters Guild. You work on a show that's had two seasons, very wonderful show, Going Home. And you've also written or co-wrote a screenplay for a movie, which I'll mention in a moment. Aaron, you are a filmmaker and you've produced a number of things. I think highest profile, probably War Room, right? With that was a Patricia Schreier movie, but more recently you've written and directed a couple of movies that people can find on Freevee, because that's how I watch them. They're called Legacy Peaks, which you co-wrote with Mac Michelatos. And
that's then, right.
And then also the Birthright Outlaw, which mm-hmm. I enjoyed. I mean, they both star Lucas Black, but also the other one has one, what's her name? Olivia.
Sanabria.
Yeah. She's the actress mm-hmm. from Just Add Magic on on Prime, which I watched with my kids when they were younger. It was like a family show that we all enjoyed.
That's fun.
And then you guys have gone together to write this book, which is a book of prayers and devotions about St. Patrick. And I want to get into that. But before I do, Matt gets a pass. But because this is a podcast about practices, I always like to start with some practice questions. And so, Aaron,
all right,
what is one thing that you have practiced a lot of in your life? And when I say this, it doesn't have to be a Christian practice. It could just be something you've practiced a lot, a hobby you enjoyed, an instrument you played, a sport you were involved with. What's one thing that you've practiced a lot of?
All right. So is it all right if I gave up this practice a while back after I realized it was detrimental to my health? Is that okay if I go there?
Yeah. You'll knock out my second question, which was like, what's something that you've used to practice and no longer
okay,
practice?
Okay. Well,
so you'll get two
I'll
in
start
one.
With that one. So when I was a kid, we had a pogo stick in the garage and I thought it was the coolest thing to be able to jump around in a pogo stick. So I practiced jumping and I got to where I could hold onto the pogo stick with my knees and use like a plastic sword to battle my cousin who was also jumping around in a pogo stick. And we'd have all kinds of fun. I probably avoided getting killed just barely. But then one day I said, I want to go for the world record of pogo sticking. And so I jumped for 3 hours straight, over 6,000 hops. And when I got off and had a splitting headache, my mom told me it was time to put the pogo stick up. So
if you're serious about your sport, you got to sacrifice your body, Aaron. Like football players are going to stop because they get a headache.
So I gave up pogo sticking at my mom's encouragement. And also when I realized there's over like 100,000 hops that was set the record on an aircraft carrier in World War II. And I thought, yeah, maybe I'll stick with fighting with plastic swords. So anyway, wow. That's something so that, you were I, only, that I practiced once upon a time.
You were, what'd you say, 100,000 hops?
Yeah, it was like 20, like over a day of hopping or something like that. So
what?
Yeah, I was far away from the record when I, it was like 3 hours for me and then I caved. So anyway,
wow.
That's my practice I did. And then I also gave up on.
Awesome.
Wow.
That is a new one. I've never heard that, but yeah, it sounds kind of
fun. I may not have told that story to anyone in my adult life ever. So James, you're
yeah, I wish I had known that, because we could have written in a little cameo for you in Legacy Peak. Maybe at the store in the beginning, you could have been hopping through.
Yes, hopping through. You never know. Oh man. Good times.
Well, so we're here to talk about St. Patrick. And I will tell you, I grew up Protestant evangelical, mostly in the Christian Missionary Alliance Church, and we didn't do saints.
Sure.
If we mentioned saints, they were people in the Bible. They were, or we're noting that we're all saints if we're in Christ, or mm-hmm. there were maybe a handful of saints that we knew outside of the biblical period.
Right.
And that
Patrick.
Patrick would be one.
Nicholas.
St. Valentine, St. Nicholas. You know, if you happen to be a little bit nerdy, you might know who St. Augustine is.
Sure.
But it wasn't something that, it wasn't part of our language. In fact, if we talked about saints, it was to look suspiciously at the Catholics. but speaking of which, my wife grew up Catholic.
Oh, interesting.
Her maiden name is Kelly. She grew up in South Bend, Indiana, in the shadow of Notre Dame, so where the Fighting Irish are. So sure. For her, St. Patrick was a bigger deal than for me, which
yeah,
patron saint of not getting pinched. But but when we were dating, one St. Patrick's Day, she said, let's do corned beef and cabbage and some soda bread. And I'm like, wow, this is a big deal. I've never heard of any of this. And I said, because I'm this kind of nerd, let's read aloud the Confessions of St. Patrick.
Yes,
and we were dating, and she obliged. If I said that to her now, she would
say, right. You guys sat really close on the couch and then read it to get from one copy, right? Your heads touching.
Yeah,
of course.
It's a very, not the most romantic book in the world, but it is very profound. That's for sure.
Yeah. 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 But what I'm saying is she would not read that with me now. She would just say, have fun with that.
I'm hearing is that St. Patrick brought you two together.
Yeah, yes.
If it wasn't that's for St. Patrick.
Yeah. However, I did talk to her about your book and show her it and how it was organized and stuff. And she's like, oh, that sounds fun. And she's very excited about it and thought it was more exciting than reading the confessions themselves. But I do want to ask in a minute how you guys came to write this book. But first, what drew you guys to St. Patrick?
I'll let Aaron answer that. Yeah.
Sure. So similar to you, reading the confessions, actually. So I grew up, I think there's like 33 million Americans who have Irish ancestry of some kind. And so it's like, oh yeah, remember, wear a green shirt on St. Patrick's Day so your grandpa or your grandma will, you know, feel good about it. And I had no idea if Patrick was any more real than, you know, King Arthur or, you know, Robin Hood or something like that. It's like, yeah, he's some historical figure, but it's the green beer and the leprechauns and the parade in Chicago and the Green River and all that kind of stuff is what I thought. And even interestingly, corned beef isn't an Irish dish.
Right, it's an American.
They barely eat that in Ireland. That's an Irish-American dish that they ate that was, you know, developed here in America in the 1860s. Yeah, so all of these pieces are super, super Americanized. So anyway, when I stumbled across a copy of the actual letters that he wrote, it was so moving to me. I was just was drawn into his story. And I think as a person of faith, looking back 1500 years to see the life that this guy lived, and the truth that he believed and how that inspired him was, it was a transformational story for me. And so I started researching it as a filmmaker and storyteller. I'm always drawn to compelling stories. So was in that process of just studying his life and personally enjoying it. And then Matt and I started talking and thought, hey, what if we could do a book to share his story more widely?
Yeah. Wonderful. Was there like maybe a project that you guys envisioned to go along with the book at one point, or were you?
Aaron and I actually met early on. A mutual friend introduced us through a film script for a movie Aaron is looking to do about the life of St. Patrick. It's a beautiful script.
Yeah.
And we became friends basically coming out of that moment. So St. Patrick it's literally been from day one of when we met each other, we were talking about St. Patrick. And that movie script actually is part of, like, that's when we started talking about, okay, when the movie comes out, do you want to do book tie-ins? And that's when we started talking about books together. And I introduced him to some of my friends in publishing, and we kind of went from there. So there's another, and hopefully a project that's still coming out there. Yeah, lots of really exciting stuff related to that. But that's what started us talking, for sure.
Yeah, I had this memory that you mentioned it on your podcast at one point in time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I would say that's one of the things when I was reading this, I was really attuned to the storytelling lens that you guys bring to the life of Patrick. I mean, certainly if you're doing something on a saint, there's always a story to be told. But I just thought that the way you inhabited the character and, you know, the different entries deal with a theme or episode in Patrick's life where you thought about it. And, you know, one I thought that was really poignant that I've never seen in anything I've read about Patrick, but reflecting on Patrick's return to Britain. Mm. You had one there about not fitting in, and you named kind of some of the trauma of what it would be to be a kidnapped teenager that spent a couple, like, what was it, like 6 months in slavery before?
6 years. Six or seven years, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Before, and having to deal with the fact that the world moved on and he may be reunited, but he's different. And I was thinking of the with storytelling, they have the hero's journey of like somebody that starts out somewhere and he leaves and returns home, but he's changed. And it seems like St. Patrick's story is like a there and back again and there again.
Yes.
He returns and he goes.
Yes.
And that was really neat. And I really appreciated that kind of sensibility that you guys brought to the project. So
I think that's go ahead, Aaron.
I was just going to say, for your podcast listeners, are they familiar with his story, or should we give them just a little 30-second version of it?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
Okay. So just again, from my lens of not knowing anything about him, I'll just give you the bullet point. So he, interestingly, isn't even Irish. He grew up in Western Britain. You're like, okay, that's the first place where the story starts to fall apart. But his journey is so profound that by the end of it, he considers himself to be Irish and the world considers him to be Irish.
Yeah.
But it wasn't by his own choice. First, he's the son of a deacon and the grandson of a pastor. He's like, I'm not into all that religious stuff. Until he's kidnapped by Irish pirates, as you mentioned, and spends 6 or 7 years in slavery in Ireland. And as he's, you know, freezing to death, starving to death, you know, enduring the beatings and the abuse that slavery was at that time, you know, taking care of sheep, he starts to pray and he starts to remember the things that were taught to him. And that's his journey of faith begins in the mountains of Ireland. And then God speaks to him in a dream, telling him a way to escape. He makes it back home, as you talked about, this awkward reunion, and then happy to be away from Ireland, but just wrestling with where he's at when God speaks to him again and says, I rescued you not so you could spend the rest of your life enjoying your freedom, but so that you can go back and share the love and the freedom that I've given you with your captors. And there begins his commission to go back and share the love of Jesus with the very people who'd enslaved him. So he didn't even make it back right away. It was a long and challenging journey to get from that call to Ireland, but he makes it there, and the love that he shares for them and the way he embodies Jesus' love for the people of Ireland is transformational in their culture. And it triggers what the what historians call the golden age of Irish saints and scholars. And, you know, it's something that's worth celebrating today, but again, we had no idea what we were celebrating. So anyway, just that's the story that captured my heart and Matt's as well. And it's so, there's so many touch points that are real and relevant to us with the way we live our life, with the questions we ask. And it echoes through time as you read the words that he wrote.
Yeah. So Patrick was 5th century, I think, right? So, I mean, this was a long time ago. I love the story that you guys tell in your introduction about the manuscript for, and I'm afraid of butchering the Gaelic here, but the Book of Armagh.
Very good.
And how it was first stolen and then put under the charge of this one family that fell on hard times and then sold it off and then it was recovered again. But as I was reading about that, I was curious, what sources did you guys go to when you were researching Patrick?
Unlike many of the saints from this period, this is, you know, the Roman Empire is coming apart right around now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, there's not tons of written documents for a lot of various saints and church history in this, around this time, like the 100 years before or after, you know, a lot of stuff is legend. But with Patrick, because of this, it's been preserved. We actually went to the original documents, right?
Wow.
That we can actually read. We didn't go see them. Yeah. I didn't, Aaron. I don't think you did. Did you? I mean, you saw him in a museum.
In the museum, I went to Trinity College to go see the Book of Armagh that has, you know, a transcript of Patrick's letters, and like, oh, it's out for cleaning today. And you're like, oh, no.
So that's an amazing thing. We can read the original documents, some letters from Patrick and things he wrote, as well as things that we suspect are from his early followers, some of the prayers and things probably he didn't write. There's a couple websites and things that we used, but most of them actually hosted these things. So we tried as much as we could to stick with the source material for the actual prayers.
It is fascinating at this era in history to have Patrick's writing so well preserved. And really it was because of the monasteries and the schools that Patrick started that you have this thread of history. So if his mission had not been effective, it would have disappeared. But the power of what he shared with people, then they kept these letters. And similar to how the New Testament and the Old Testament were preserved by scribes and passed around in copies, and people think of the Dead Sea Scrolls and things, the same way there's a whole family of manuscripts of Patrick's two letters, which, you know, are quite extensive, his confessions and his letter to the soldiers. Mm-hmm. And then, as Matt mentioned, we have other famous prayers, like the it's called the Lorica, or the breastplate of Patrick, that is perhaps written by Patrick, but definitely written by one of his spiritual grandchildren, or preserved by his spiritual grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And then there's other pieces of non-church history that talk about the events and eras of his time. There's the lists of kings and the lists of, you know, that you can kind of see and corroborate, but it is interesting. It's sometimes called, you know, this era is sometimes called the Dark Ages, which is perhaps a bit misleading, but there was a lot of chaos in this era for sure. So finding such a beautifully preserved autobiography is fascinating. And just one more thought on that. At the time, introspective writing, where I'm telling you what I'm feeling, was very uncommon. You have St. Augustine, who did that in his confessions right in the same era, but then most of the writing was talking about facts and not talking about what I'm thinking. And Patrick, in his letters, he says, I'm sorry guys, I can barely speak and write Latin. My grammar is very poor. My writing style is not very flowery. I can't write concisely focused essays. So I'm just going to tell you what I'm thinking and feeling. Mm. And as you read it, you say, I just get a portrait of this guy's heart. Yeah. And that's what makes it, I think, so powerful. It's unlike most other documents from his era. You know, you have to go back to, say, King David to get someone who pours out what he's thinking and feeling in the Psalms. And then, you know, Augustine. And you see more and more of that later in history.
Right.
But to get such a beautiful portrait of a man's soul is very unusual for this era of history.
Yeah. And I think that's what makes it compelling, right, is that it's in many ways – his story is incredible, but as you guys will explore, is that there are these points where we can find ourselves in Patrick's story, that he's relatable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Well, I think for comparison to like St. Nicholas, right, who's another one of the very famous saints that kind of across Christendom, everyone says, yeah, this guy was following Jesus and good, becomes Santa Claus, etc. We have literally zero words that he wrote, nothing.
Yeah.
The earliest biography we have of him is about 100 years after he died, which is around Patrick's time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's really a fascinating, beautiful thing to be able to have this firsthand account of Patrick and his life and his emotions. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. I know that this is a mild spoiler, but you're working on a project later that's a second one on this, on St. Nicholas,
right? Yeah. Yeah, I am. Yeah.
I want to get into the actual book, but I just want to ask, was there anything that you guys learned about Patrick that surprised you when you were researching this?
I feel like Aaron had a lot better handle on Patrick coming in than I did. I'll tell you a story I love is there's a story about him meeting these two daughters of a king. Mm-hmm. I'd never heard this story before. And they start asking him all these questions about what is God like, basically. And Patrick's response is this beautiful, like, kind of prayer, song, sermon thing that I was actually reading it aloud yesterday and I got all choked up. I was like, oh gosh, it's so beautiful. Like lots of nature imagery, and it ends with him essentially saying, I know that you're the daughters of a king, but I wish you could become daughters of God so you could know him like I do. It's just beautiful. It's just you just see the man's heart in that, the way that prayer is, or a sermon or whatever it was, is written.
I would say similar to Matt, my biggest surprise, in addition to how well documented he is, was how much his faith is identical to ours.
Mm.
So form and function across time, we were speaking earlier of practice.
Yeah.
If you went to his church, you would say, okay, they, you know, cut bald spots in their heads. I have a naturally occurring bald spot. So, you know, what's that?
That's what I would say.
Right. Yeah. You can't see the background, but I have to now wear a hat or sunscreen when I'm outside.
Yeah.
But the idea of how they did things evolves over time, but the heart of what they believed is so identical to where we're at today. He opens his letter and he launches into a Colossians 1 summary of the supremacy of Christ and how out of who Christ, who Jesus is and what he's done for us flows everything else. And he lays out a theology of missions, mm-hmm. which, you know, if in his era of the church, like every era, there's racism and prejudice and discrimination. And in his time, it was Roman Christian good, pagan barbarian bad. Yeah. And he says, that's not what I see in my Bible. I see that Jesus is this, this, this. And the Old Testament says this, this, this. And Paul says this, this, this. And it's just this amazingly laid out, you know, doctrine and theology and passion for the lost. And that thread is so identical to the beating heart of who Jesus was and who he calls us to be today. And just to have that point along the way, sometimes we think, you know, as even you were laying out, James, oh, it's the early church and then us today. And in between, there was nothing good. It's like, well, no, there have been faithful men and women who have been carrying on the work of Jesus this whole time. Patrick was one of them. And it inspired me to be one of those today and to ask those questions. Where's my Ireland? What is God calling me to do? How can I follow Patrick just like he was following Christ?
Yeah, I think that that's one of the things I really appreciate from what I know of Patrick is, I mean, there is this recovery of Celtic Christianity because it's creation affirming and is aware of the spiritual world in the way that, modern people aren't. Patrick does talk about angels and archangels, and you guys pick up on this a little bit. And also this idea of mission, of explaining and sharing the goodness of Christ with others and letting Christ transform Ireland and the world. So getting into your book, I want to say, like, if I could just give a brief account of the format of each entry, is that you guys start with a quote from Patrick and maybe a relevant scripture, and then you have some devotional reflections and a prayer. And sometimes I think that that prayer comes from the writings of Patrick or his followers, especially when you get into the later sections, you have St. Patrick's Creed and the breastplate is the formation of a lot of it. Sometimes it's I think your guys' prayers as you reflect on that part of Patrick's story. And you guys organize this chronologically into four alliterative sections of son, slave, saint. Oh, excuse me.
Student, student, then saint.
And then saint.
Saint, yeah.
Was there anything in particular about each of those stages that we should learn about Patrick? Like, what does Patrick, his son, tell us?
I mean, it is interesting as you expect a saint. Sometimes the stories of the saints are like, oh, like one of the a legend will be like, oh, this saint from the moment he was born, he wouldn't even nurse on fasting days, like this kind of stuff. But that Patrick makes it really clear that's not his story. His story is he's born into a Christian family and he was at odds with Christianity as a kid. But it didn't connect with him or for whatever reason. Which I think is really interesting and really relatable for many of us who grew up in the church and had Christian family going back, generations. And then to see him come back after his personal experience with Christ, I think it's really beautiful, actually.
I would add to that with in the sun section, just thinking about the people who invested in him, and for inspiration for moms and dads and teachers and Sunday school teachers and pastors out there who are pouring into kids. You never know who you have in your home, in your or in your classroom, and like, don't give up, because you might be raising a little what looks like a little punk, but he or she might turn into the next Patrick. And what
Patriot
a
state of
you know what amazing responsibility as parents or teachers that we have. And Patrick looks back with gratitude on the people who poured into him and didn't give up, didn't stop praying for him, didn't stop encouraging him. And I think that's just such a beautiful thought that he shares.
I loved that how you guys framed it as you had the Lord's Prayer as one of your prayers, reflecting on when you don't have words to pray. And that was language that Patrick was trained in, being in a Christian family, but it wasn't something he owned yet. And yet the words were somehow shaping him, and the people in his life were gifts that would sh shape and form him that for later. So I really appreciated that.
Well, that's what we see in the slave section, right? Is that he's for years in another place where he doesn't even have a Bible, right? Let alone a church or a church community. And it's the place where his relationship with God is rekindled as he's thinking about and praying about these things he remembers. And, out, he's a shepherd actually for part of this time, that he's literally out there in the rain with the sheep praying, like King David before he was king, which is pretty amazing. That, and I think to Aaron's point, like all this training that probably looked like it was lost, all this teaching that from the teacher's point of view or his parents' point of view, they'd be like, oh, he's a lost cause. those are the very things he falls back on in this moment, or the moment in these years of hardship that end up drawing him close to Christ.
Yeah. That's neat. And I think his slave experience is also, that's where he's most marginal in a way. And I think that that shapes him for mission later, in that he cares about the suffering.
Well, and he learns the language. Mm-hmm. He learns some of the culture, like things that are going to end up being important later in his life when he's becoming Irish.
Yeah. What do we learn about him as student after he's returned from years in slavery and is home, and I think also in Gaul for part of it, right? But he's not yet doing mission, but he's having these visions and hearing from God that that's coming. But what do we learn?
Yeah, it's interesting. He actually gets formally trained in the church, right? He ends up becoming a minister. And he says himself, he was never particularly good at the book learning side of things. Now, we know he does learn Latin, and we assume, you know, his theology is such that you can tell that he got some training.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting, right? Like, he comes back from exile, essentially, and not only reconnects, he says, I want to be part of the church. I want to help, even run the church. I think that's it's a pretty interesting moment.
James, I'll just, you can edit this out. Thank you so much. I have to jump on this other call real quick, but such a pleasure to meet you. Thank you. I'll catch you guys in a little bit.
Yeah, I'll talk to you sooner.
Okay, bye.
If you don't want to edit that out, it's also fine. Aaron had to bounce, so.
I mean, otherwise it's weird. Like, where did Aaron go?
Yep. Yeah. So, So the student part is really fascinating, I think, in that Patrick, again, sometimes the mythology of sainthood is this person that is born into John the Baptist, right? In scripture we see John the Baptist, before he's even born, the Holy Spirit empowers him and he recognizes Christ from inside the womb, which is pretty amazing. But this is not Patrick's story. Patrick's story is much closer to ours as regular saints following Christ, is that he had to learn and grow and become connected to God, become connected to the community of faith. And in that sense, I think disciple just means student, right?
Right.
So that's what we're seeing, is this transformation of Patrick from someone who hated the idea of Christianity to someone who desperately needed God, to someone who willingly entered into discipleship in the community of faith to try and become someone truly following Jesus. And I think it's a pretty cool story. Yeah.
It is very, very cool. I think the other thing I loved about that section is that it is kind of a waiting period. Is that it?
Yeah.
You have one chapter where you mention that we think of Patrick as a person of action, but you know, that's not how it felt in his life, is that he.
Right. Yeah. And we don't even know for sure how long he was back in Britain. Because, you know, it's not like he wrote down the dates on this day I went and did this.
Right.
Some scholars think he may have been in his late 40s or early 50s before he returned to Ireland. So it's possible it was literal decades that he spent ministering and serving in Britain before returning to Ireland.
Yeah. Well, and then so our last section, this is where we think of St. Patrick, is when he's back in Ireland and he's has these dramatic encounters with the Druids and with the king and soldiers and all these stories, and is so good at removing the snakes from Ireland that no one knows they were even there. Like,
yeah, good job.
Yeah.
Right. And I think one of the things I love about Patrick's story is that the reason he's so beloved and the reason he achieves sainthood in the sense of everyone calling him Saint Patrick actually has very little to do with the miraculous. There are miracles that are part of his story, but the vast majority of it has to do with the fact that he saw the needs of the Irish people and responded and tried to meet those needs. So he tried to do away with human sacrifice, which was a part of the culture at the time. He tried to do away with slavery, which is something that he took very personally, right? He tried to help the poor, of which there were many, find ways to be fed in their community. So it's kind of beautiful to me that the thing that everyone, the reason everyone loves Patrick is because Patrick saw the Irish people and cared for them and their needs and did his best to use his spiritual connections, his earthly connections, and his time and attention and resources to try and help the people of Ireland. So even though he's not Irish, that's why he's become associated with Ireland, which I think is really cool and really beautiful.
Yeah, that's so neat. I love that. The last question, and on your book, but I was curious, and sorry that Aaron isn't here for this question, but was there anything you learned about yourself as you were working on this project and journeying along with Patrick?
You know, yeah, I think that, so I grew up in the church and I have a lot of knowledge in the most positive sense that came to me from the community. And then I have things that I learned almost as shorthand. So St. Patrick is a great example of that, where it's like, okay, what do you know about Patrick? Okay, he was a saint. He was Irish, I think. He lived in Ireland. He chased the snakes out. He lit the Easter fire. You have these six things. He used the three-leaf clover to teach about the Trinity. You know, like you have like this very basic knowledge, and some of which is incorrect.
Right.
And I think what was fascinating is looking back into the actual Patrick's life. Like we think of Patrick as, oh, that's a Catholic saint.
Yeah.
And he is. I'm not trying to downplay that. Yeah. But I think for Protestants, we can then dismiss him. Oh, there's, you know, it's not something there for me to learn because he's Catholic. That's something different. Yeah. But that's not true at all. Like Aaron said, when you start reading about Patrick, you're like, this is a person who deeply loved Jesus and was following Jesus, like many Catholics, of course. Mm-hmm. But there's something really valuable there in the time and place where he lived. He was someone who was doing everything he could to follow Jesus without turning his back on the culture he was in. I just found the deeper I dug into the story of Patrick, the more compelling I found it. And the more I saw the need for his story in the contemporary world I live in, where Patrick... There's a big fight going on in Christendom about how do we deal with sin in our culture, right? So there are some people who say the way you deal with it is you take over the government with Christians and you you legislate away sin.
Mm.
You create penalties, essentially, governmental penalties. There are people who say you withdraw, which there were people in Patrick's day saying that. You withdraw, you become a monk, you cut yourself off from culture.
Yeah.
Patrick didn't believe in either of those things. Patrick believed that what you did is you become a part of the culture, right? Incarnational living. He becomes Irish. He emphasizes the Irish things that move people toward God. And he condemns and tries to remove the things that don't for those who are following Jesus. You know, he was buying slaves with tithe money. He was sending strongly worded letters to soldiers that were killing and harming people and telling them, like, this is not the way. You should not be doing that. So I think that's really fascinating. We see this activist sort of involvement in culture, not just how do we remove ourselves or the damaging things from culture. He became a light within the culture.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I think that's something I've spent a lot of time thinking about since learning more about Patrick. But the bigger thing, I think, is just this recognition that some of the things I learned as a kid or even as an adult in Christian culture was really shorthand. It wasn't all of the details. And that as I press in and learn more, there's actually really valuable, interesting kind of treasures of information out there. As we start looking at them more closely, our spiritual forefathers and foremothers and the things they did and were a part of 500 years after Christ can still be meaningful to us 1500 years later, you know?
Yeah. Well, so I didn't say this earlier, but I will say that you guys say in your introduction, like you do have this swath of, you can go through and read these as daily devotionals of.
Sure.
But you also, you could peruse the table of contents, and these are topically organized. So
right.
Things like a prayer for when you feel helpless, a prayer for freedom, a prayer for persecution, a prayer for seasons of waiting, protection for, so whatever you're going through, it is also perfectly valid. You could take this book and go straight there and say, well, what is it that Patrick has to say to us? And what is it that we can pray along with him with?
Mm-hmm.
I like to always ask that at the end, but what are some practices that you do personally that nourish you for your life and work?
You know, something, I think last time I was here, we talked about Sacred Space, which is actually an Irish website run by the Irish Jesuits.
Yeah.
But you know, something I've been thinking about a lot is that my wife over the last couple of years has gotten me in the habit of going on a walk every day. Often with her, and we just chat as we walk for, you know, a while. Sometimes it's just 15 minutes. Sometimes it's half an hour. But I've really kind of hit this place where that daily walk has become a place that I kind of untangle my life a little bit. Sometimes it's talking to my wife. Sometimes I'll be on the phone with someone. Sometimes it's praying. It's different things. But there is a little creek near my house called Salmon Creek. It used to get salmon. It doesn't anymore that I know of. But this time of year, the bald eagles come in and have a nest. The osprey are coming in. There's deer down there. And it, you know, I live in a little suburban tract home, so you wouldn't expect that. But yeah, there's something really life-giving for me about just going on a walk, either in my neighborhood or down by Salmon Creek, and just letting the world unwind for 30 minutes or an hour. I find that I miss it when I don't do it, especially if I miss like a whole week because I'm traveling or something. I don't know. That's one.
Yeah, that's neat. And I would agree. I live on the other side of Oregon from you, but I think we're in a beautiful part of the world where there is this connection with nature, and that's, you know, kind of a tie-in with the
story. It's interesting, right? This was a big part of Patrick. Patrick was deeply, and this, we talk about Celtic, especially Christian Celtic spirituality is very nature oriented. And this was true of non-Christian Celtic religion as well. Mm-hmm. It is interesting, like spring is coming right now in this hemisphere. But so we have like a pet rabbit. And about 10 days ago, he started shedding his winter coat. It was still cold, but somehow he knew, his body knew, it's time to get rid of this and get ready for the next season. Right as the first spring flowers are coming up, the days are getting longer, the birds are starting to sing, the trees are budding. And there is something really spiritual about being attuned to and aware of the seasonal changes that are happening in nature and in ourselves, because it does create, we don't think of it this way, but, and I'm shedding from old age, not from, you know, seasonal change, but it does change some things about our bodies, the way the light, and when the light comes, my mood lifts considerably as we move into spring. I think it's more sunshine and it's hopeful for me. And it's different for different people. So I think that's really interesting too. And It's weird that my rabbit makes me more aware of these things because I'm seeing the change. My rabbit's so lethargic all winter, and the last like 10 days, he's just been a jerk. Like he's waking up and he's suddenly like very active and like biting things he shouldn't bite. And like he comes over and like grabs my leg. Like he has expectations like, do you have food for me? Are you paying attention? And it's like, oh yeah, okay, we're waking up. Something's changing in the world. Which, I don't know, it's kind of interesting. Yeah.
Neat. Lastly, and I mean, you can answer for Aaron if you want, but if people wanted to connect with you or the work that you do, where would you want to point them?
Yes. Yeah, so for me, you can just go to any, if you can spell my last name.
Anywhere.
Anything, anywhere. Yeah. I'm somewhere there and I'll get back to you eventually.
Yeah.
Aaron does have a website, I think. Let me check real quick. Oh yeah, Burns & Co. So go to Burns, burnsco.us, and you'll get Aaron's his main website. He also, if you look for Burns & Co. on Facebook, they update that pretty often with what's going on.
Neat. Okay. Yeah, so, yeah. I think he's not really on social media anywhere.
Not really. I mean, he's on Facebook, but you'll get more interaction if you go to one of his company website or whatever.
All right. Well, thank you, Matt. And my thanks to Aaron as well. This is a wonderful book, and I would encourage people to get it anywhere they get good books. You can order it from the Evil Corporate Overlord or your local bookstore. I'm planning to get this out before St. Patrick's Day. So if you listen to this episode when I put it out, you still have time to get it if you want some reading for St. Patrick's Day.
Awesome. Thanks so much, James.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. You can find information on how to connect with Matt or Aaron in the show notes, and please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. It does help people find this podcast, and it's really appreciated. Until next time, keep practicing.